It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's being called a last stand for the protesters in Hong Kong. Hundreds of activists, including teenage students, hold up for days in a university there, upping the stakes, doing battle with police using any weapon at hand, police firing back at times with live ammunition. Security forces made one charge in, only to get repelled. Other protesters trying to break the siege getting arrested and dragged away. Some injured students were later evacuated. American and other foreign students had already been told to leave.
I really hope that someone could give a helping hand.
The campus chaos spread throughout the city, thousands out in the streets again in the pro-democracy cause. Hundreds just in the last few days arrested and injured. 4,500 nabbed in over 5 months of unrest, with a stern warning from authorities.
I would urge those rioters, do not try to escalate the level of weapon or violence.
Another warning from the U.S. Hong Kong and its Beijing backer must address the protesters' demands.
Unrest and violence cannot be resolved by law enforcement efforts alone. The government must take clear steps to address public concerns.
So far, the only Chinese military intervention has been a squad of off-duty People's Army soldiers this weekend clearing up a debris-strewn street. But the words from Beijing and its surrogates are getting tougher. No room for compromise, one official said, and foreigners keep out.
We urge these forces to immediately stop any form of interference in Hong Kong affairs and China's internal affairs.
Now, there was one small victory for the protesters on Monday. A Hong Kong court ruled that a government ban on face masks being worn by the protesters was unconstitutional. It was a small comfort, however, for those on the front line.
Yeah, small comfort indeed. I wanted to play that for you because I think that's the most dramatic story on the globe this morning, including our drama in Washington. I do. Because as Greg Palcott just explained from Fox News yesterday, this is kind of the last stand. And the protesters don't have the weapons that the Chinese have. The Chinese have, I think, really held back because the whole world has been watching. They haven't been able to do what they would normally do, which is what they did in Tiananmen Square, which is, you know, mow them down, kill them, murder them, and make them disappear. That hasn't happened yet, but no doubt this is the last stand, and no doubt those young people, and it's not just young people, it's most of Hong Kong. Remember, teachers and medical personnel, people were signing on left and right just defying the Chinese authorities because they know what's going to happen. If China has its way in Hong Kong, the people of Hong Kong will lose their freedoms. It's just been astounding to me to see how young people raised like our young people understand the dangers of socialism and totalitarianism and are willing even to lay down their lives. Some have already done that, just a few, but some have disappeared. We know that. They know the dangers. They know it full well, and yet they are marching in to conflict. You heard those girls on the street. Greg was interviewing them, and they said, we're hoping some help will come. We're hoping that someone will help us. I don't know if the president, and I know that the president and Pompeo are warning China against using the Tiananmen Square methods on the student I keep saying student protesters. It's not just students, as I said. I think that is a mischaracterization. It's certainly the young that are carrying, you know, the street marches and all of that because they are young, I'm sure, but they have widespread support in Hong Kong. It's getting very dangerous, and I just think we need to pray for them. Many, many, many of them are Christians. and they understand what's going to happen to their freedoms to worship and to profess Jesus. They know what's happening on the mainland, how the Chinese authorities are cracking down, closing down churches, destroying churches, you know, it's a horrific time in China right now, and it's coming to mainland Hong Kong, and they know that full well. So we need to pray for them. Pray for them as you are moved to do that, as God brings that to your mind. And so we'll be watching Hong Kong. Meanwhile, of course, we have our own drama playing out here. It's starting today. Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox and Friends gave a rundown. Let's listen.
If you didn't get enough last week, we've got 9 witnesses over 3 days this week. Today, you get 4, 2 this morning, 2 this afternoon. It'll be the same format as last week. Let me show you how it's going to go. You'll have a gavel in 3 hours at 9 a.m. Then that'll be opening statements and the swearing in. And the questioning, the extensive questioning, 45 minutes each side will happen, followed by the 5-minute member rounds. Here's who we hear from first. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Venman, a Ukraine expert, detailed to the NSC, and Jennifer Williams, a special advisor to Vice President Pence. Both were on that July 25th phone call, central to this entire impeachment process. Both testified behind closed doors that the president's call was unusual and concerning. Venman said there was no doubt in his mind the president was demanding an investigation. Williams called it inappropriate. Note that Venman is a central figure in the Democrats' case against the president. Then this afternoon, you'll have special envoy Kurt Volker and NSC aide Tim Morrison at 3 p.m. It comes on the news, though, as 2 more depositions are released, the transcripts. And it's from Undersecretary of State Political Affairs David Hale and David Holmes. He is the Ukraine embassy aide to Ambassador Bill Taylor, who told lawmakers that he overheard the phone call between the president and Ambassador Sondland, and that Sondland used, quote, salty language, conveying the president's only caring about an investigation into the Bidens, and that the president, quote, doesn't give a S about Ukraine. Holmes has been called to testify now Thursday. He's the newest addition to this list. Of course, tomorrow, Ambassador Sondland will take the hot seat. We're very fascinated to see what he has to say. One firework that we may see, guys, just to pay attention to this morning with Colonel Venman, and that is he, of course, had questioning shut down during the closed door part because some of the Republicans were asking him if he was indeed the whistleblower, because twice he raised concerns about the president's policy in Ukraine.
Yes. All right. So Griff kind of spelled it out. If you followed that, you're a lucky person. I think the American people are. I can't imagine. It's hard for me to keep up. I can't imagine most of you listening to that and really being able to comprehend just with those short reports exactly what's happening. But we do know this, that the Democrats are hell-bent on impeaching this president. That's true. And what is also true is they don't care if it's based on truth or not, because so far, the witnesses have only said that they thought they disagree with his policy. They didn't like his tone. They listened in on the conversation. They thought it was inappropriate. If they listened in, the one so far that actually heard the phone call, the witness they called yesterday or Friday was someone who was sitting at a dinner table and claims he overheard the president on the phone with Gordon Sondland talking. That's the testimony. That's the powerful testimony. Okay, so this is what's happening beginning this morning. Now, interestingly enough, this Venman we've talked about quite a bit, he's the guy that testified in uniform who has very, his past associations link him to the people involved in undermining the president. He's not an innocent character. He's not like a patriot coming forward. And this is a really interesting story this morning. Kash Patel, I mentioned to you that there were 2 staffers for Devin Nunes, who have been come under attack by the Democrats. They're alleging ethical violations, and one of the reasons they're going after them is because they are so effective. These guys that are moving heaven and earth, like Devin Nunes and the House Freedom Caucus. They have great staff, and their staff has to do a bulk of the work, and they need great staffers. So a lot of what they do is the result of the great work by their staff. So Kash Patel is one of Devin Nunes. And so interestingly enough, Kash Patel, who is an official on the National Security Council, is suing Politico for defamation and accusing the news outlet of colluding with Representative Adam Schiff. Patel alleged in a lawsuit filed Monday that Politico published 2 defamatory articles about him that were based on leaks of inaccurate information provided during the Trump impeachment inquiry in October. Two witnesses testified that Patel provided documents to Trump regarding Ukraine. Patel is saying, I have nothing to do with Ukraine. I never did anything like that. And one of the persons that floated this was Vindman in his testimony, claiming that it was Patel. So Patel, by the way, this reporter for Politico, according to Patel, was working. Her name is Natasha Bertrand. They are accusing her of colluding, collaborating, and conspiring with Adam Schiff to defame him in those articles. And Fiona Hill and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman were the ones who gave testimony implicated Kash Patel in something that he claims he had nothing to do with. So he's suing Politico and the publisher. So that's a really interesting wrinkle. Plus, Congressman Lee Zeldin was talking about closed-door hearings they had last week after the public hearings. They had closed-door hearings, and he said that budget official Mark Sandy testified before Congress over the weekend and said things that change a lot of things, the narrative. And in fact, Lee Zeldin says that the hearing should be postponed due to the new development of that testimony. So I'm sure we'll be hearing about that today. I wish I could be more specific, but I can't. You heard that, I'm sure you've heard, because I've heard it for several days now, that Jennifer Williams, who is a special advisor to Vice President Mike Pence, is testifying today. And she is, allegedly, she told them that her testimony to the House Democrats was that she listened in on the president's call with the president of Ukraine, and her comments were, it was unusual and inappropriate. Okay, so that's her damning remarks about overhearing the president's comments. Now, the president is fighting back. In a tweet, he called Jennifer Williams a never-Trumper. Now, I would just say this. It is very true, absolutely positively true. I can tell you that it's true, that Mike Pence has people around him who are never-Trumpers, and they are champions of Mike Pence being president. This has been going on since the president was nominated. In Jennifer's case, she came to Vice President Pence from Herbert George W. Bush's administration. Now, the Bush family and the Bush team in Washington, and they have a huge network, are all never-Trumpers. Well, there are some exceptions. There are some exceptions. But for the most part, they cannot stand President Trump. And they do everything. They are the big army of never-Trumpers. And Jennifer Williams, according to President Trump, and he doesn't spell this out, he says it in a tweet, so I don't want to put words in his mouth. But let me tell you that if he tweeted that, it's probably true. You find that he drops in things in these tweets. People laugh about it, but he has knowledge that we don't have. And I have knowledge that tells you that Mike Pence has people around him that are never Trumpers, who were, you know, fantasizing about President Trump, really happy to think about him being impeached and putting President Pence in place. They've been working on that for some time. It's been very troubling. And so she's testifying today, and we'll find out what it is she has to say. The worst thing is that it's inappropriate. The call was inappropriate from her perspective. Did we elect her? I mean, is this an impeachable offense? Of course, we know that it isn't. It really has gotten to the ridiculous. Now, the IG, changing the subject, we know that Michael Horowitz is going to testify on December 11th. And now remember, the IG is trying to discover if the FISA court was completely abused by the FBI and others. And so that he's delivered, I think the report is 500 pages long. And so we believe that there will be indictments, and there certainly will be a lot of detail that we don't, that we haven't had before that. This is interesting, and I don't have time to get into it, but top Republicans on Wednesday demanded that Intelligence Community Inspector Michael Atkinson, on the other hand, the one responsible for this alleged whistleblower who is, we know already who he is, and we know that he's connected to the deep state, but yet he's being protected by these whistleblower protections, and we know that Michael Atkinson, through some very unusual processes, changing the form, ignoring the advice of the Justice Department, put this guy forward. And so now leaders in the GOP, including Grassley and Ron Johnson, are asking him some very hard questions. I can't go into the details right now, but stay tuned. Coming up next, something really interesting. Don't go away.
Hi, it's Michael with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. I met 14-year-old Ahmed earlier this year in the Middle East. At 12, he had been recruited to be a suicide bomber. His dad died fighting for ISIS. His mother and seven siblings were radicals, but they embraced the gospel. And when they did, he viewed them as infidels and wanted them dead. But his mom prayed nonstop for his salvation. It came, and when it did, he was beaten nearly to death by the radicals he hung around with. When he and I met earlier this year, he was able to open his Arabic Bible and see where Jesus says, "They'll hate you because they hated me first." But with tears in his eyes, he said, "Michael, there's hundreds of young guys like me going to kill themselves in the name of Allah. We need to save them." And he's led dozens to Christ in a place where they need the Bible. Would you join us in this wonderful work to support the persecuted church?
Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YESWORD. That's 800-YES-WORD. Or click sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com.
Hey, Bart, I know the perfect Christmas gift for a congregation to give to their pastor and his wife.
What's that, Jan?
Sign them up for the AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
Oh.
You know how every pastor's family has extra stress because of their position in the church and community? It's like living in a fishbowl.
Yeah, and we've lived through that. The holidays can be especially stressful. So your idea would give the pastor and his wife something to look forward to.
This Christmas, why not give your pastor and his wife a ticket to the Fishbowl Retreat? It'll be March 31st through April 2nd at Pine Cove Camp near Tyler, Texas. We have space for 30 couples, and it'll fill up fast.
You can get more information and register your pastor and his wife at repairingthefoundations.net. That's repairingthefoundations.net. Or you can call 662-844-5036, extension 300.
Merry Christmas from the American Family Association and from the AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Jawaid Bazar is the owner of an internet service provider in Denver, Colorado. His building is in the city's Five Points neighborhood, an area that's been overrun by homeless people and drug addicts. Mr. Bazar says the homeless are literally using his alleyway as a bathroom stall. Piles of human waste, dirty needles litter the sidewalks around his business. He calls the police on a daily basis, sometimes 10 times a day, but the city refuses to address the problem. So you can imagine Mr. Bazar's anger when he received a citation from the city, fined for refusing to clean up the human waste and dirty needles. The Denver Public Health Department says it's not their job to remove human waste, especially since it happened on private property. Ladies and gentlemen, this is taxation without representation. And this is what happens when you let Democrats control your local government. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, you may or may not know that something really dramatic happened this past weekend. I'm guessing maybe you don't know, because when I was Googling, as I was trying to find out the details of this and refresh my own mind, I had trouble finding articles about it. Fox covered it faithfully, but I don't think other sources did, and this is what happened. Two soldiers who were in Leavenworth, convicted of killing enemy combatants in Afghanistan during the fights over there. One had served, I think, 8 years, and the other, I'm not sure how many years, we'll talk about that in a second, were not only released from prison, they were pardoned. And in addition to that, the president ordered the promotion of Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher. You probably heard this story. He was acquitted of killing a prisoner in Afghanistan, but then he was found guilty of having a picture taken next to a prisoner's corpse. So the president overrode military officials and gave him his achievement that he had earned. It's just, and we'll get into the details of that. But I want, first of all, to go to a moment on Fox and Friends this week where Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, who has been in Leavenworth for 8 years, was pardoned by the president, and he tells the story of how that happened. Let's listen.
Well, the prison staff came to get me. I was laying on my bunk, and they came in there to get me, and they said, "Hey, you got a phone call." And I'm like, "Okay, who's calling me? You know, that's not normal." And so they take me to this little legal office, and we're in this little back room, pretty much. And they have a phone, like a conference phone, on the table. And some colonel comes on from the Pentagon and says, "This is Colonel so and so. Stand by for defense officials." And so I'm like, "Oh, who's calling?" You know. And so she wanted to verify my identity and everything. And so then some really nice lady comes on, and she's from the White House, and she says, "Ask me if, you know, I'm Clint Lawrence." And I'm like, "Yes, ma'am." And she's like, "Stand by for the president." And I'm like, "Okay." And so then all of a sudden the president comes on, and he says hello, and he introduces everybody in the room. And Vice President Pence was there as well. He says hello. And President Trump then told me that he was about to sign a full pardon and an expungement of the record. You know, he kind of gave me an insight into his personality a little bit. You know, I've seen him on TV, you know, and Twitter and stuff. But, you know, talking to him in real time, it really gives you the opportunity to see what kind of person he is, what kind of leader he is. And, you know, I'm just so impressed with the vice president and the president. I can't say it enough. I just told my hometown this last weekend. They threw a big, huge parade, and there was like a police escort and everything else. And so I can't say enough. You know, I'm so, you know, happy to be an American. I mean, I'm just so glad that we're part of this, you know, amazing country, and it's got such great, you know, impassioned, you know, leadership. And it's just, it's amazing.
All right, so that was just part of that interview. It was just amazing. We'll put actually all of that on our Facebook page in case we can't get to it, because he says some amazing things. Well, someone who can certainly relate to this is our next guest, because Derek Miller, who's been our guest before, served many years in Leavenworth himself for killing an enemy combatant in Afghanistan. And Derek has told his story before with us. He was released, but he hasn't been, his record has not been expunged, and so he still carries that. But he has become the executive director of Justice for Warriors Caucus, and also he is an advisor to Congressman Louis Gohmert. And Derek and others were working very hard to get these guys out. Derek, when you heard Clint's story, could you relate?
Absolutely, I could relate, and it was a moment of joy and relief that I was able to keep my promise to my brother to continue to fight for him to come home, and finally he walked out of that prison.
So you've been working pretty much nonstop since you got out to get, was it Clint and also Major Matt Goldstein, were they two on your list of people to try to get released?
So Major Matt Goldstein was on our list for the prosecutors walking all over his rights. I mean, we started out reading about this case and looking into the court-martial when his mother, Julie Goldstein, approached us and asked us for help for her son. And as we started digging through the trial transcript and we started digging through some of the non-judicial punishment that Matt had gone through, essentially the military wanted two bites of the apple. What they did was they initially gave him a letter of reprimand, non-judicial punishment, for killing a Taliban insurgent during an ambush. After reports surfaced and he went out and did some media and applied for a job, a federal job, and they asked him about the incident that he got a letter of reprimand for, the military came back and said, "Well, we want to prosecute you now. After we had already punished you, we're going to court-martial you for an unlawful killing." And years after this thing had already been adjudicated and he had been moving on with his life, they sent investigators over to Afghanistan to interview alleged family members of the Taliban bomb maker that he killed in a lawful ambush. So we got Congressman Duncan Hunter, and who's a member of our caucus, and we got Julie Goldstein, Matt's mother, to go on Fox News and talk about the steps that the prosecutors were taking to violate Matt's rights and the steps that they were taking to prosecute our warfighters. And after that, the president tweeted out that Matt Goldstein's case was under review, and fortunately, last week, he was pardoned, so now the government cannot bring charges against him. And that was one of the cases that we were fighting for. Wow. Looking at Eddie Gallagher, the Chief Eddie Gallagher, his case was on our radar, and we really were fighting for this guy. Congressman Duncan Hunter is his congressman from back home, and he brought this case to our attention. And it was all over Fox News. The president was tweeting about it, how the prosecutors took steps to spy on his defense emails. They put spyware, lines of code, inside of his defense emails so they could get a preview of what the defense was going to say at trial. Completely illegal, violates his due process, and also should get someone, a lawyer, disbarred. But the military prosecutors continued with the trial. There was no punishment other than that prosecutor being moved off of that case so that he can go forward and do that to somebody else. And then on trial, on the stand, a second person who was provided immunity admitted to the killing that Eddie Gallagher was being tried for. He admitted that, look, I committed this murder. Chief Gallagher did not do this. And the prosecutors did not dismiss charges. They continued to go forward. Well, luckily, we have a president who knows what it feels like to go through a sham trial. And he said, "This enough is enough." He stood up and he restored the rank of Eddie Gallagher, and he allowed this brave warrior to go home with his full benefits.
You know what, Derek, I think people just can't quite comprehend. First of all, this is a separate, those of you in the military, just to be clear, because not enough people serve to really know this, when you get in trouble, you have a separate justice system, and it's the military court of justice. In your mind, if you were to diagnose what's happening here, that so many good men who, in the course of trying to protect and defend their country, have been imprisoned and then treated so poorly by prosecutors, how would you explain that to civilians? How is that happening?
So what's happening is a rush to judgment. When in Vietnam, we had a case of Cali. He was a Army officer who went out and committed a war crime. He killed a lot of civilians, ordered the killing of a lot of civilians. And ever since that took place, there is a knee-jerk reaction to any combat shooting that is alleged to be improper, that they will not allow something like this to happen. And the warfighters are the ones who are not getting the benefit of the doubt. We have been trained, we have been honed, and we have been sent out into these war zones, you know, with the mandate, lawful mandate, to defend the Constitution and to kill the enemy. And there is a rush to judgment where our warfighters are not getting the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And these generals and these officials basically come back and say, we're going to hold these guys, quote, accountable, not do a full investigation and find out what happened and defend our warriors if it was a lawful shoot, but simply to rush and push these court-martials. And unfortunately, the juries that they select and that they put forward are convicting with little to no evidence.
Derek, just to expand on, you were referring to the My Lai massacre and Lieutenant Kelly, and that was a very famous story for decades. I would say, I would take this further, because what we're seeing, for instance, in Guantanamo Bay, what we're seeing down there with the legal teams who are allegedly working, you know, for the military, is they are populated by radical leftists who really do hate this country. And that's why, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is still living, even after we know he masterminded 9/11, that he beheaded Daniel Pearl. He's still down there, you know, exercising his rights, because we have so much corruption in the military justice system. I want to also play for you a little bit of what Clint Lawrence said yesterday. I'd love to have your response to this. When he was on Fox News, he was talking about, he was asked about why the Pentagon was opposing the president's decision. Let's listen.
Clint, there are some at the Pentagon who did not want this to happen because they feel like it would impact military justice going forward. What's
right.
your message to them?
Well, I think they responded at the Pentagon that the president is indeed part of the military justice system. You know, there's a book out there called Court Martial, and, you know, I read it a few months ago, and you'd think I've had enough of court martials, but... So, you know, it sort of enlightened me to presidents all the way back to the beginning of our republic have been getting involved in the military justice system. And there were a few presidents who even ordered courts martial themselves. And, there was one president who decided to be the convening authority himself. So he was the first line reviewer of the court martial. So essentially he was trying the person himself. So, you know, what President Trump did is not unprecedented. But to me, it's life changing. To my family, it's life changing. To our military, it's life changing. And it's just something that, you know, I told, you know, Hunt County, because darn near the whole county was there.
That's right. I saw the video.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I told Hunt County the other night, I said, you know, a soldier or a service member who knows that their commanders love them will go to the gates of hell for their country and knock them down. And so I think that that's extremely important. And you know that, sir, you know, being in the military yourself, you know, and anybody who is not part of the senior Pentagon brass will tell you the same thing.
Yes.
And I think folks that start putting stars on their collar, anybody that's got to be confirmed by the Senate for a promotion, they're no longer a soldier. They're a politician. And so I think they lose some of their values. And they certainly lose a lot of the respect from their subordinates when they do what they did to me, which was, you know, throw me under the bus. Now, not sound like a victim or anything, because I'm not. I think, you know, I'm happy. I'm actually proud of everything that happened to me, because it turned me into a better person. It gave me an opportunity to get closer to this country and to, you know, little tiny towns around the country, all over the place. They're just they're packed full of awesome people. And it's just, you know, it'll really, going through something like that, you know, they reach out to you through the mail, and it really reminds you of how amazing this country is that we live in.
All right, so that was Lieutenant Clint Lawrence, who the president pardoned and released from Leavenworth after all of these years. He was sentenced to life, and then it was reduced to 20, and I think he served 6 or 8, something like that. And that was him on Fox and Friends. You know what, Derek, he reminded me very much of you, I have to say. When we had our interview several months ago and you told your story of how you'd been released, and how many years did you spend behind bars, Derek, at Leavenworth?
I spent 8 years at Leavenworth.
Yeah. To me, the miracle in this story is the incredible spirit that I hear in your voice and also in Clint's. I don't hear any bitterness, and you, of course, have applied yourself to trying to get other men out that you feel have been unjustly put behind bars. Now, Clint said a lot of things there. I just would love to know what struck you and what you'd want to respond to there, whether it's the Pentagon or some of the other things he said.
I think the sentiment with the Pentagon is really big. I mean, that resonates with me. If you think about these senior officials who don't complain, you don't hear them coming out against, you know, Guantanamo detainees, people who have gone out and killed U.S. service members and NATO forces being released. There's no protest against that. But when an unlawful incarceration of a American hero like Clint Lawrence, like the trial of Eddie Gallagher and some of the other guys that we fought for, you hear all these, you know, high-level, you know, officials coming out against us. And it just really shocks me to my core that the people that we go over to defend, that are supposed to have our backs, are willing to throw us under the bus at any given moment for, like I said, to appease these foreign governments or in a rush to judgment without even looking at some of the information that was withheld at trial or the trial within itself. These guys will go out and petition against us, getting our freedom and getting true justice. And that, to me, is one of the travesties of this whole process.
You know,
Clint Lawrence is a... Sorry?
No, go ahead. Clint Lawrence.
Clint Lawrence is one of the best young men that I know. I spent 6 years with him at Leavenworth. And
wow.
Getting to know his family and seeing them in visitation, it's amazing how, you know, we as service members can take any adversity and turn it into a positive. I mean, our faith and our love for this country and our faith in God are motivating factors in us coming out and being productive. And I have no doubt in my mind that Clint Lawrence will take this negative part of his life and turn it into a massive positive.
Yeah, I think you're right. I totally, the spiritual part of this We don't even have time to explain, to embellish, except that no question that what man meant for evil, God meant for good. And in your life, Derek, and I can see it also in Clint's. I don't know Major Matt Goldstein yet, and Eddie Gallagher, but I hope and pray that it's the same story with them. How many people would you say, or give us an idea of who's left that has not been, that's still in Leavenworth or somewhere else after these draconian sentences?
So we have three cases of people who are still in Leavenworth that we are going to be fighting for. We were able earlier this year to secure parole for First Sergeant John Hatley through some of the work of the caucus and the Congress members going down to his clemency on parole board. But they set his date for October 2020, and we're going to push to see if we can get that moved into 2019. We'd like to have a home before Christmas so he can spend time with his disabled mother and father. This guy has no disciplinary record. There's a 0% recidivism rate, a rate of reoffense for people who are confined for these combat-related killings. So we're asking that the clemency and parole board use their discretion to move his date closer so that he can be home with his disabled mother and father. But there are keep in mind that there are court-martials and allegations brought against soldiers, especially special operations soldiers being, you know, forward now in these fights. Every day. I mean, we have SEAL Team 5 was just accused of allegations, and were luckily we had those charges. We were successful in getting those charges knocked down. So this is a real systemic problem with not just the high-level brass, but the military justice system in and of itself. They have created a culture where these prosecutions are rampant, and the misconduct and the unlawful command influence is a massive problem.
Yeah, and let me just put this in context, Derek. This, from my point of view, began with the Obama administration and the rules of engagement, the impossible positions that were placed on our soldiers. You're out there to defend yourselves, to defend this country, and then everything that you do and did was scrutinized, presented in the worst light, and then your own even honest defense was not allowed. It's just horrible. But what's happened is, of course, the Pentagon has been populated by a lot of leftists, and they're still there. They are still there. And I'm not sure how you root that out, except the president countered and made them unhappy this past weekend about what he's doing. Let me just make clear, Derek, again, is the executive director of the Justice for Warriors Caucus, and this is a not-for-profit organization, and I'm sure those of you listening who love the military might want to donate to Justice for Warriors Caucus. Derek, they can find that online under that name, right?
Yes, the Congressional Justice for Warriors Caucus. They can find it on Facebook, and we have a Twitter page. They can follow us and keep track of some of the warriors that we're fighting for. Also, we are requesting a meeting with the Secretary of Defense to address some of our concerns with the military justice system, and why he felt so passionately that he went out and actively lobbied against, justice being served in these cases. So we want to get to Secretary Esper and talk to him about why he felt like this sentence and these cases were not worthy of the backing of the Pentagon.
Yeah, good. That's great. That's great news. And I would be remiss if I didn't explain again that the congressman who was really in the thick of this and helping you, Derek, is Congressman Louis Gohmert and his chief of staff, Connie Hare, of course, who's a very dear friend of mine. And they are helping Justice for Warriors Caucus, and Congressman Gohmert is throwing all of his resources, really, and his heart and soul behind helping you guys. So I just wanted to give a shout-out to him. I want to I think the clock is, we need just a few more minutes here, but I guess we don't have it. Oh, no, Derek, I have to go. But listen, I appreciate your time, and you know that I just have such admiration for you, and I want to ask people to continue to pray for you as you sort your own life out. And I'm so glad that God has given you such good work to do, to apply your expertise, for better or for worse, to help other soldiers who are finding themselves in this situation. God bless you, Derek Miller, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Sandy.
Okay. All right. Well, Sandy Rios with you. And don't go away, because we have just something fun when we return. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments as to whether President Trump has the constitutional authority to rescind the DACA program instituted by former President Obama via executive order. During arguments, Justice Sotomayor opined the Trump administration hadn't taken sufficient account of the personal, economic, and social disruption that might result should DACA be terminated. This is a policy argument, not constitutional analysis. The only issue the court should be considering is whether a sitting president has the constitutional authority to rescind a previous president's executive order. Period.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek.
Politics is important because it affects decisions and laws passed by politicians, and they affect almost every issue that's critical to life and death here on planet Earth, including the gospel itself.
We'll also talk with Sandy Rios and AFA store director Angie May about Christmas buttons. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Every child wants to please their parents. Imagine how it must feel to be a little boy when one parent allows you to behave like yourself, a boy, but the other parent dresses you as a girl, with bows in your hair, fingernail polish, and calls you a girl. Pray for Jeffrey Younger as he fights for his son's gender identity and send him encouragement by signing the petition at afa.net/activism. Also, pray for this boy's mother to turn to God and change her intentions. afa.net/activism.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Patriotism, they say, is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Well, in that case, there are a lot of scoundrels in the House of Representatives. They pretended impeachment was about preserving democracy, but it's not. That's why the basis for impeachment keeps shifting. First, it was a thing of value, then it was quid pro quo, and now, after doing focus groups on which accusation sounds the worst, it's bribery. This has always been an impeachment in search of a crime. The truth is, the president's opponents hate him. They hate it that he fights back, unlike every Republican president before him. They hate it that he protects religious liberty, babies in the womb, and our southern border. They hate him because they don't like his personality. In other words, this is not an impeachment. It is a hate crime directed against the president of the United States.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As impeachment hearings continue to dominate the news cycle, a reality check is in order. Attorney General William Barr provided one in an address to the Federalist Society last Friday. He observed that, quote, immediately after President Trump won election, opponents inaugurated what they called the resistance, and they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool and maneuver available to sabotage the functioning of his administration. Now, resistance is the language used to describe insurgency against rule imposed by an occupying military power. It obviously connotes that the government is not legitimate. This is a very dangerous, indeed incendiary, notion to import into the politics of a democratic republic, unquote. The Attorney General went on to warn that, quote, it is the left that is engaged in the systematic shredding of norms and the undermining of the rule of law, unquote. Bravo, General Barr. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
On the front of this Main Street McDonald's,
oh, I loved it,
is an image that's become something of a Spring Hill tradition.
It's kind of nice to see people be able to share their faith again.
Well, it's Christmas time, and it represents what the season really is, you know, and it's good to see something like that.
The owners have been displaying nativity scenes almost as long as they've been selling Big Macs. Some 40 years ago, the current owner's father had high school students drawing them at his store in Columbia, and today the nativity scene is an annual staple at all seven family businesses.
It's always a Christian theme. Not many businesses, I don't think, will back up like the Christmas as being a Christian type holiday. I guess they're afraid of being politically correct.
That may explain why a recent Facebook post showing the window has gone viral. In a day when many complain of a so-called war on Christmas, some see this Spring Hill McDonald's as a refreshing tradition that hasn't gone away.
I totally support what they do, and that's why I keep coming back.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, that's a little bit of good news dropped in, because who would have thought that a McDonald's restaurant would have a nativity scene? It's beautiful, by the way, in the pictures. Have the courage to do that, because others are not quite so courageous, and we're going to get into that in just a second. But certainly, the American Family Association has identified this war on Christmas. We identified it several years ago, and in response to it, we started producing Christmas buttons. And this year, these Christmas buttons say, "Jesus, He came for you." I've asked Buddy Smith, who's our Senior Vice President, to join me and tell us about the point of this. What is the point of this, Buddy Smith? And thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. Well, the point is, Sandy Rios, Jesus came for you. He loves you so much that He left all the splendor and glory of heaven and came to planet Earth because we are sinners and we're in need of a Savior. And He's the one who came, and I tell you what, it's just the best news this world will ever hear, and it's time to tell everyone, Sandy, that Jesus came for them. I'm excited about this time of year and the opportunities these little Christmas buttons afford us. When I walked in the studio this morning, I told Adam, Jesus came for you. I told Rob, Jesus came for you. And so that's the message. God wants us to tell the world that what the cross said over 2,000 years ago still says today. The message is clear. God loves us, and He came to save us from our sins. And that's what this little button is all about. It's about wearing it on your clothing when you go out about your shopping or your daily activities leading up to the Christmas season. And Sandy, someone's going to notice it. It's so beautiful. It stands out, and they're going to say, "Hey, I sure do like that button." And you know, that's the signal right there, just to take it off and hand it to them. If you know their name, call their name. Tell them Jesus came for you, and pass it on and share it. And if you don't know their name, ask them, What could you tell me your name? And then give them this wonderful news that that Jesus loves them.
So obviously that's a great message, Buddy. I love it that it says that. So the idea, though, for us wearing this is to start conversations.
It is.
And also reestablish that Jesus really is the center of Christmas. By the way, it's
absolutely
Christ. It's Christmas.
Yes.
It's Christmas.
Yes.
And we will not be silenced on that, and I think that's part of it. But this button is not a defiance.
No.
It's just a statement of, hey, it's Jesus. It's all about Jesus, and
is.
He came for you. All right, so let me it just is. Get practical here, because these
right.
buttons come in packs of 10.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to order some, you can do that. You can go to afastore.net, afastore.net, or you can call and order them at 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917. Buddy, you know, we got some bad news just yesterday, and I just have to mention this. Chick-fil-A has made a big decision that's pretty heart-wrenching and gut-kicking for me, I'll have to say. Let me just give some background here. Chick-fil-A, of course, I remember when I was at CWA in Washington, D.C., Chick-fil-A would cater a lot of our meals. A lot of conservative groups on Capitol, we always used Chick-fil-A because they were Christian-owned and they were very open about it.
Right.
And then, of course, through the years, they have become, when the Cathy, or Cathy, I guess his name's pronounced, Dan Cathy, made these comments during the gay marriage battle.
Right.
That he was in support of marriage between one man and one woman. And since then, Chick-fil-A has become the object of wrath of the LGBT community. And so yesterday they released a press release. Maybe you could, if I don't want to put you on the spot because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this ahead of time, but do you, your understanding of what they are going to do, what they're press statement said. Do you know?
Well, from what I understand, Sandy, they felt like for some reason, and I think we all understand what the reason was, they needed to clarify some of their giving principles going forward. And so they basically announced a change, especially two organizations that they've been giving to, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army. So the announcement was that, they had planned to give them so much over a certain amount of time, and that period of time had come to a close. So supposedly the announcement was all about kind of a clarification going forward. We're going to be supporting certain causes, and then later said, I think, that it could include faith-based groups. However, back to your comment a moment ago, that all this got started years ago when the founder did make a pro-marriage statement, and the gay movement has just pounded that organization ever since, and they will not stop until Chick-fil-A not only says gay marriage is okay, but shouts it from the housetops and says it's something we should celebrate. So we know how relentless they are and how demanding and how hateful they are. But it is so discouraging that Chick-fil-A would somehow even feel the need to acknowledge these people. I mean, why don't they just go on about their business and their mission, if it hasn't changed, and do what they do best, and that's fry up some chicken and support causes that do lift up Jesus Christ and the gospel. And, it is so disappointing because we have been, and I say we, the American Family Association, over and over again has been, in their cheering section, and we've been encouraging believers to, yes, I mean, this is a company who stands for Christ and stands for biblical values and truths, so you should go and you should frequent their business. And now,
yeah, we've been saying that. Yeah,
yes,
we might
have.
Not say that so much. Maybe we'll go to that McDonald's in Spring Hill. but seriously, it's a serious problem. It's a very serious problem, and we should not let this go.
No,
you know, remember
we won't.
Remember when there was this support Chick-fil-A day, and
yes,
the place was just mobbed.
Oh my!
And they
yeah.
made so much money that day, and they have continued to enjoy
yes.
the support of the Christian community worldwide.
Yes,
they just opened up a place in Toronto, and in spite of what the reports are saying, people are waiting in long lines to get in.
Right.
It's not bothering the people
right.
that they took a stand on marriage way back when. It's really a sad thing, but let me just say we are doing what we can to counter that. And meanwhile, today we are offering those Christmas buttons, which go to your local Chick-fil-A and talk to the manager. Where
yes.
that button may be.
There
Jesus,
you go.
He came for you, Jesus. He came
did.
For you. If you'd like one of those buttons to wear during the Christmas season, go to afastore.net, afastore.net, or call to order at 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917. Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association. Buddy, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us, and happy button wearing.
Yeah, thank you, Sandy, and Merry Christmas to you and Bruce. Maybe I'll be the first to tell you that, but maybe you've already been wished that.
No, we haven't, so that's
right.
Very nice. Thank you, buddy. All right, have a great day. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.